This week is Parshas Shoftim. Shoftim v'shoytrim titen l'cha b'chol shorecha. Okay, so let's begin.
That's why I say in the United States it's Shoftim.
Okay, Mark. Come, let's learn. Parshas Shoftim. Shoftim v'shoytrim titen l'cha. So let's start with some politics. Again, we get into trouble with politics. What's the hot topic this week? What's going on in the world? Many people here don't even want. Some people don't look at the news. They don't know what's going on. But what's going on in the world is the key word of this week is mandate. Mandate. That word must have been said a billion times this week in the media. Mandate. There's a pandemic, and this is taking place. And there is science. And there are people who, whatever, and many people who have power feel, for whatever reason, they feel, some of them I'm sure very sincere, they feel that there are certain rules that have to be followed for the safety, public health, for the safety of mankind, not just of themselves, and they have expressed in many ways and forms, even through legislation, through personal opinion, through whatever it is, everyone has to follow the rules. And if you don't want to follow the rules, we're going to force you to follow the rules. Okay? I'm not making this up. Okay? You know, our governor, the last press conference he had before he shamefully resigned, you can summarize this whole. I listened to this press conference. I think it was the last press conference. I think the essence was that it is his duty, and he will make sure that every single person in this state will take the vaccine, whether they like it or not. And if they choose not to, he will make their lives miserable until they do what he says. That was his last press conference, and the mayor. It's the same thing. Exactly the same thing. Okay, New York City is in fact was the first to encourage with extreme measures, and he basically begged, the mayor was literally begging all private businesses in New York to refuse services to anyone that does not want to participate in what he feels is for the safety of the people. Okay, this is not, and there are other states, other Los Angeles is following this. And then you have throughout the country, there are many people who have a different opinion, and everyone's entitled to their opinion, and government is involved, and Biden, and this, and schools, and hospitals, and healthcare workers. I'm not here to go tell you politics. I'm sure you know everything a lot better than me. But it's been out in the open this week in the world. Not just in America, of course. America's mild compared to what's taking place in other parts of the world. In Australia, it's a military state now. No one ever seen this coming. It's mamish, a military state. And it's in the world this whole week. It's been front and center, the principle of coercion. Coercion, we have a policy, and I'm not discussing here, it's not my purpose here to get involved in politics. We have a policy, whatever the reason is. And the question is coercion. We are going to force you to follow the rules whether you like it or not. So let's just use that as a stepping stone to what does the Torah say about coercion? Okay? Now, what does the Torah say about coercion? I'm not going into... Obviously, you can't generalize because there are so many different types of situations. A person is a danger to society, a person is a terrorist, a person is a biological bomb, or a person, you know, that's one topic. Then you have situations where let's say someone stole money from me. Okay, someone stole $1,000. Someone stole money. So, and the person has the money. I would be very happy if the government just goes into his bank and takes it away and gives it back to me. You know, you can't generalize. I'm not here to express my opinion. this is the topic of the week. You cannot, I don't think anyone can deny that this has been the hot topic of the week. How far does the principle of coercion go? And obviously it's an extremely complicated topic because you have to, there's a reason why you're forcing people because you...
It's
you,
martial law. It's such a big martial
So exactly. So this, right, exactly. What does the Torah just in general, I'm not talking about specific details of every situation in general. It's mamish hafeichba hafeichba de kulaba. It's the first Rashi of the parasha. Shoiftim v'shoiterim. Appoint for yourselves judges, lawmakers, the legislature. And then if you just have a legislator, you don't have a police department, you don't have a department in your government that it will enforce the law, then what is the
law enforcement, right?
What's the law worth? You have to have people who enforce the law. So what, that's the next word. We have the shoiftim, we have the court system, the legislature, and then we have the shoiterim. We have a police system. We have enforcement. A shoiter. Enforce the law. Follow the rules. If you don't follow the rules, we're gonna make you follow the rules. Look how Rashi tells you the meaning of the word shoiter. Rashi gives us a bit of, again, you can't generalize. Every situation is different. But Rashi here is giving us a general understanding of what it means in Judaism to force the people to follow the rules. His words are, Shoiftim dayonim ha-poiskim esadin, the legislature. This is the law, whether you like it or not. This is the vote. We took a vote, the Supreme Court, a local court, the people, democracy. They've put a person in office. They've voted him into office to make decisions for them. And now we have the enforcers, the shoiterim. Look at Rashi's words. If you were writing the Rashi, if anyone was writing, they would probably write it a little bit different. I don't think they would be mechavin to write what Rashi wrote based upon the fact that we're Americans and we've been influenced by the world at large. Rashi is writing from a Torah perspective. And I'm not here to say that what Rashi's writing over here is applicable to America or the rest of the world. I'm just trying to put everything in perspective, being that we're learning Chumash. What's a shoiter? Haroidin esa'om achar mitzvosam. I don't even know what the word haroidin means. Haroidin means to rule, to force. Yeah. It's not the word I want to focus on anyway. Haroidin. They're roidin, they're... Oh, it doesn't say, that's not...
Strong,
it doesn't say convinced. It's very... We'll go further. Shemakin. Okay, haroidin means they rule with an iron fist. Okay, they rule with an iron fist. Esa'om.
Maybe it means enforce.
Okay. I don't have a good translation, and I don't want to really focus on this word anyway, even though, how could you not? Otherwise, you're missing half the pshat, but let's just, anyway, do the best that we can.
Makat
mardus.
Makat mardus. Makas mardus. Rebelliousness. Okay, whatever. Achar mitzvah. Here we go. Here's the part that I want to focus on. Shemakin. They hit. Physical. Okay, they get physical. Okay, not just, you know, niceties and threats. They come with a baseball bat and they beat you up. Bamakel, fine with the bamakel with a stick, uviritsu, a whip. They take you, they tie you down. But here is the part that I want to that just really shook me up a little bit. And again, I'm just thinking out loud here, as Ramayevsky always says, we're thinking out loud over here. And you know, how could you not? If this is the topic of the week in the entire world, over 7.5 billion people are struggling with this principle, and it's the first Rashi in Chumash, hafeichba hafeichba, coercion, mandates, what does it say? Ad sheyikabel olav es hadin hashoifet. Until you accept upon yourself the law of the judge. Now, if I were writing this Rashi, I would say, who cares if you accept? I don't care what you think in your mind. You accept, you don't accept. Just force the person to do what he's supposed to do. There's a very big difference in forcing a person to do what he's supposed to do and forcing him to accept upon himself, this is what I'm supposed to do. At least in my understanding, maybe I'm wrong, I'm thinking out loud with you. There's a very big difference In other words, let me try to put it, give you an example. Right. Yeah, for example, let's say, yeah.
But how about the example of Kofin also Anshe Yamar Rosh?
Exactly what he just said. Exactly. Rabbi Neiman just said exactly those words. What does that mean exactly? Let's just take a simple example. And I'm not sure this is even accurate. A person steals $1,000. Okay, someone steals your wallet. Okay, so I know as a fact that my wallet is in his home. We go to court, call the police, go to the judge, and the judge says, we have the evidence, it's clear as day, he even admits, I have his wallet in my home. And the judge says, give it back to him. And the defendant says, no, I'm not giving it back. No way, I don't care. I don't care what you say, judge. Your honor, it's not my honor. I don't care what you have to say, get lost. So he tells the court officers, do what you have to do. So there are two things they can do, the court officers. They can just, you sit here, they tie him up. You sit here, and the court officers go to his house, they break down the door, and they take the wallet off the table and they give the wallet back to the person. Right? Isn't that simple? Isn't that solving problems? You stay here, we'll go, the court officer, you have a warrant, you have a permit. The court officers, they go into the house, they take the wallet, here's your wallet, here we give it back to you. The door's locked, we break down the door. That's one solution. And the other solution is no. They take the person, they beat him up. They beat him up until, okay, I myself will now go home. I will go home. I will open up the door. I will retrieve the wallet. I will come back and put the wallet in your hands.
You can kill him?
You don't kill him. I'm not talking about killing anyone over here. I'm talking about they're different now. Tell me, now in the person's mind, let's say they beat him up until such a point where, okay, I'm going to go home. I'm going to come back and give you the wallet. Now, in the person, in his mind, what is he thinking? I don't know what he's thinking. The person, the guy, they beat him up, he goes home, he gets the wallet, and he brings the wallet back and he gives it to the victim. In his mind, does he appreciate that he did the wrong thing? I really don't know. I don't know how all this works.
Will it carry over into the future? That's the question.
So they are nafkaminas. There are different types of way of coercion. And obviously, there are different psychological, Dennis Wilbur is here, different psychological effects on the person. It's one thing if the judge says, you don't give back the wallet, okay, tie him up, someone goes into his home, breaks into the home, takes the wallet and brings it back, gives it to him. Then there's some type of, you cannot say not, but there's some type of psychological effect it has on the person when they beat him up. We don't do any of this today, obviously. Today, this is not practical. Today, no one's going to know no physical type of torture today. But if Bezin would coerce him in some way or form where he has to go home himself, open up the door, take the wallet, walk back to the court, and give the wallet to his victim. Even if he's not happy with the decision, even if he's cursing and he's very angry, it's just different. Everyone here will admit it's a different experience. Now, does he agree with the principle that what's being done to him? Well, if he's being forced to do it, it seems he doesn't agree. He's very angry, very upset. But it's a different type of experience. I'll give you L'may Nafkamina. Let's say the court doesn't have the power to break down the guy's door. The person has, let's say the money is protected behind electronically with passwords and techniques that the court cannot just, they can't do it. They just physically cannot go and retrieve the money on their own. The only way they can do it is by convincing the person. Or the other way around. There are type of situations where there will be nafkaminas. What do you do in those cases? So if according to Rashi says the only way we're forcing him is until he accepts upon himself the din. Until he accepts. Let's say they beat him, and he doesn't accept. I refuse. At least after all the beatings, I don't care. I am not going to give back the money. And by the way, this person's apartment is wide open. The court officer can just easily walk into his home and take the wallet off the table and give it back. He can do it in a second. No, Rashi says, don't you dare. don't you dare enter his home. Even if it's on the floor, let's say it's in this pocket, it's right in front of us. No, Rashi over here says coercion is force him to until he says, I'll do what I'm supposed to do. And let's say he doesn't want to accept, he wants to be tortured to death, he's willing to die for this. Do we take the money out of the possession, his bank account, his table, his pocket, and give it back to the victim? Again, I don't know the answer. Every situation is obviously very different. You know, and every type of situation of coercion, whether it's the physical danger, it's financial, how people are involved. But the words of Rashi speak for themselves. The words of Rashi are, they roidim es ha'om achar mitzvasam. There's physical, ad kadei kach, there's even physical force, shemakim, the koifsin b'makel, they force him with a stick, uviritzua, ad, here are the key words, sheyikabel olav es hadin ha'shoifet. Talk about something more practical. Let's say you go to a shul.
Well, what Rashi's saying is you don't stop until, so in other words, you might kill him.
I know, you can't, obviously,
well,
you're not going to kill him.
It comes to a point. That's what it means.
I don't think you can. You can't kill a person.
It's
not
that Mishnah on the Mishnah of Kofen Oso Ashiyom Marotani, looking at the Pharisee Israel, it says, but they take them over. Because people are going to be vigilant.
But there's no need to kill him. Just let the Bezin walk into his home and give back the money. Go and retrieve the money. I don't know every situation. The Torah over here is presenting you coercion. In the words of Rashi, it's not to get, it's not to achieve the result, necessarily. The purpose of coercion is the person should be willing, I will now follow the rules. And if you can't achieve that, is it kedai, are you permit, is it kedai just to go bring the result about without the person accepting? I don't know. For example, you go to shul, very common, you go to shul, and stop the talking during davening. Okay? Stop the talking during davening. So there are different ways you can stop the talking during davening. You can take a person, tie him down to the chair, put duct tape over his mouth. You can put duct tape over his mouth.
They do that in the airplane.
Okay, I know that. Or you can stop the davening. Many rabbis, what do? They stop the davening. We're gonna wait until the talking stops. A lot of these methods, when the day is over, they're not effective at all. You know why they're not effective? Because a lot of these methods, you're forcing people to achieve the result. You're not forcing them to obey. You're forcing the result. You have a situation where there's talking. So what are we going to do? We're going to stop the talking. How do we stop it? We shoot the guy. We do something to the person which basically prevents him physically from talking. We prevent him from physically. We don't force him, we can't, because we don't live in a society. We don't live in a society where you can force a person to say, I accept upon myself that I will not talk. The techniques that are used more or less in shul to stop the talking during davening is you basically force them not to talk. You don't force them to accept the law that I will not talk. The talking is forcibly stopped. How? Either you throw them out of shul, you throw them out, or you throw out their neighbor. By throwing out their neighbor, they know that they're next. Or you stop the davening and you embarrass them. They have not accepted upon themselves not to talk during davening. You just basically force them to stop. You force the talking to stop. You've not forced them to say, okay, I realize I the person, have no choice, even though I disagree, I will no longer talk. It doesn't come to that. And that's why it's so unsuccessful. When you force the result, instead of forcing the person to accept upon himself that he will obey, it doesn't work. So you'll say, well, listen, you know, we can't have talking, so we have no choice but to shoot him. If that's the case, that's the case. You're right. If you have a person, you have a society where people are a danger to each other because there's a danger and you have to force the results upon people. Okay, if that's the way it has to be, I understand it has to be. But it's a very ineffective way going forward to bring about the desired results. Yeah.
First, then if he doesn't.
Rashi, read the words Rashi. What are the shaitan? They're violent people, the shaitan. They're violent people.
You have to give the person a chance to be the
Kabbalah. Well, the judge told them, there's the shaitan. Well, it's super obvious they know what the law is. The judge shaifed him. The shaitan says, you're guilty. Give him the money. No. I'm not giving away my money. No. So then there's shaitan. What does the shaitan do? Haroidin esa'am achar mitzvah san. They force the people with an iron fist to do what they're supposed to do. Now, what does that mean exactly? And he goes on to explain. He didn't need to say all these words over here. What does Rashi need to say all of this? Shemakin v'kaifsim b'makel uveritzua. They physically harm them. Ad, now what would you say? Until they give the money, until they do what they're supposed to do. Rashi doesn't say that.
He didn't first talk to them and say this.
It's super obvious. I mean, you don't have to say that. Super obvious. Ad, what's the end result? When have the shaitrin accomplished their mission? I would say when the mitzvah is done. When the command is done, isn't that the mission accomplished? If you owe the money, so I'll go into your home, I'll take the money and give it to the victim. Mission accomplished. The mitzvah is done. Get the mitzvah done. I don't need the person who's in violation. He's irrelevant. No. Rashi says the accomplishment of the mitzvah, that's irrelevant. That's irrelevant. What's relevant is the people are willing to obey. I accept the law. I accept the law even though I thoroughly disagree with it. I accept the law. We've been forced to acknowledge that we have to accept the law whether we like it or not. Ad sheyikabel olav es din hashayfet. They accept the din. It doesn't say that the mitzvah is done. And again, this is super general, obviously, because if you have a terrorist walking around the streets with a nuclear bomb ready to detonate it, obviously, it's a different type of situation. Okay? And what takes place in society, obviously, is all subject to interpretation, subject to everyone's understanding and feelings and science, v'chulu v'chulu. So it's not a very practical Rashi to apply in general to society. But I just want to point out, this week is the week in world history of the mandate week. The principle of coercion to follow the rules, whether you like it or not. Okay, I get it. What is the, let's just use the stepping stone to appreciate what does the Torah say about coercion. And look at that, and this week it's the first Rashi. There's Shaitan and Shaitan. There's the law. If it's the law, it's the law. Okay, the law is the law. People don't want to follow the law. Okay, then there's a Shaitan to make sure you follow the law. What is the goal of the Shaitan? What's the focus of a Shaitan? The goal of a Shaitan, the primary goal is not that the law should be observed. That's not the primary goal. The primary goal is the people should understand that even though they disagree with the law, they have to observe the law. That's the primary goal. And that has a nafkamina when you make laws. And you could, when I was a camper, so we had a training session. It's the only thing I remember from camp. The trainer told us, you're going to be a counselor, and you're going to have campers. I'm telling you psychology, how you'll be a successful counselor. Never threaten a student, a camper, with a punishment that you cannot and are not willing to carry out. Don't tell a camper that if you do this, I'm going to throw you out of camp. You're not the Baal HaBos here. You can't throw him out of camp. You can't do anything to him. So by saying that to a camper, you lost all credibility. Telling a camper you're not going to be able to go to the night activity, you don't have the power to do that. You can only threaten a person with punishment, something that you have the power to do and something that you will do, you will carry out. If you overstep your bounds, then you've lost all credibility. When you plan ahead and you make laws, the laws have to be planned ahead with an understanding that there's going to be enforcement. Because if there's no enforcement, then the law's a joke. So what is enforcement? What is enforcement? We're going to get the job done whether you like it or not. Rashi is telling us that's a recipe for disaster. Because it's not the goal, the enforcement, the planning of enforcement is not to get the job done. The enforcement is that the people can be forced to acknowledge that they have to follow the law. It has to come from them. Again, as we said 10 times, that has limitations. So you're dealing with danger, a terrorist. You're dealing with a danger to society. That's a different type of story. But in general, that's what enforcement is all about. And when you see people taking power and just going for the goal and not going to work bypassing the forward that people have to understand, it's a disaster going forward because people will resent it and they never came around to accept that you have to do. And the end of the day is they'll outsmart you. They'll end up violating the law 10 times more than what you thought the result of. You have them on one little thing. They pay taxes, $5. Oh, you got the $5. Yeah, next time around, they'll steal from you $1 million because they don't accept that they have to pay taxes.
The thing is, outsmarting was when Sakura made that big wedding there.
Okay, this is an incredible Rashi. Rashi here is providing us insight into the human condition, in what it means.
Behavior. They're not correcting their behavior.
It's not a matter of the behavior.
Carry into the
There's
behavior.
Coercion. The people don't agree. They thoroughly disagree. They have to be forced to obey. What does that mean to force a person to obey? Rashi says the ideal, it's not always practical, but the ideal enforcement is to force the person to understand that even though he disagrees with every single element of what you're saying, I still have to obey. If the goal, machshava rishayim, is we're going to make a law, and the way we're going to enforce it is we're going to take your money away from you whether you like it or not. We're just going to go into your bank account and do what we want to do, and we couldn't care less about you. This is a disaster. It's a disaster. We're making a law and we're going to enforce it. The way we're going to enforce it is we don't care about you. You're not part of the equation. You're not part of the equation. We're just going to do it. We're going to do it because that's the law. And we don't care about you. You're finished. That kind of law is a law that will never ever stand, will never ever survive. If you have a way of making a law and the way you're going to enforce law is to make sure you're going to twist the arm of the people to accept that they have to do what they're supposed to do, even though they don't want to do it, but it's coming from them, that's a law that's good. Now, in the time of Chazal, they had techniques which are shaitim, where they beat them up. Today, we live in a different type of world today. Today, you know, there are other techniques of enforcing people, but you always have to ask the question, do you have the power? Do you really have that kind of power? Or are you just, you know, it's a grab. It's a very delicate type of such. Every situation again is different, but it's very refreshing to read the words of Rashi. He didn't need to say this, and he's saying a world of commentary about the human condition and a system of government, of justice, of dealing with laws and enforcement. Okay, let's go to another idea.
By the way, yes. the fact that the shotel stands there with the lapel and the tu'ah is
deterrent. Enough. The Cold War.
I don't know if this actually happened. I'll tell you one story. I knew a person who was shotel HaKnesset.
Yeah.
He was the shotel HaKnesset, the Knesset Israel in Yerushalayim. And he said, "You have no idea how many times I threw out from the Knesset Menachem Begin." He used to scream and when he was Haver Knesset. And he was such a nice man. I hate to throw him away, but I had to throw him away. Mamashi took him by the hand and
picked him up physically, took him out.
That Shoter HaKnesset.
Fascinating.
It was his job.
Fascinating. It's a deterrent. The Cold War, that's the whole Cold War. United States and Russia. Who has more nukes? You don't have to shoot anything, you just have to have more nukes. The one who has more nukes wins. Okay, let's go to another idea. We discussed very briefly this week the principle of Hazeroya Vehalichayayim V'akeva. I want to say, it's just a thought. There's a mitzvah in the Torah to give to a Kohen on every single animal the leg Rashi says the from the knee down. I don't know how much meat is on an animal. The first, not really the knee, it's the arm. And the animal has four legs, obviously. So the front, on the front right leg from the knee down, that part of the animal is severed, after shechit, of course, and is given as a gift to a kohen. Even today, it's supposed to be so. The stomach, the cava of the animal, I don't know what they do today. Today they probably don't. Even sell it in the market. It's probably used for some for animal food, whatever it is the stomach. And the lichayayim. The lichayayim are the cheeks. And Rashi writes, the gam haloshen, or im haloshen, with the tongue itself. With the tongue. Okay, so this is a halacha. And this halacha is a very, very big problem for us. Every animal today that is slaughtered in the entire world, kosher animal, the halacha demands that the leg, the stomach, and the tongue. I've told you, tongue today can cost between $50 and $100 in a glatmart. Okay, a whole tongue is given as a gift for free to a kohen. So the one who gets shlishi, the one who gets kohen, you go to shul on Monday, Thursday, Shabbos, the one they call kohen, you should go over to them after davening. I got for you a gift. We bought a whole animal, and here is the tongue. Here is, wow, pickled tongue. Take it home to your wife. You'll have a really great dinner, great Shabbos. Invite some guests. This is the halacha afilu bizman hazeh. Is this done bizman hazeh? No, it's not. If it was done bizman hazeh, you would not be able to buy Blackmar tongue. I see you have the mustard. Is ready there to go? Tongue. It says tongue with mustard. You ask for that avarin, so you have the mustard ready for the tongue. Okay. So this is not done today. And it's a big problem. Why is it not done today? So the answer they say, the reason why it's not done is because the butchers would go out of business. If every butcher had to give the tongue, I don't know about the cava, maybe they don't want the cava. The cava today is not healthy. And the zroya, I don't know how all the different parts of the meat, how it all works, but it's not done today. Why not? So they'll tell you because they'll go out of business. If we could give away the tongue and the zroya and the cava to every steward, koyein, we would not be able to make a parnasa. They'll also argue that we don't have kohanim meyuchas in bizman hazeh. That's a very weak argument.
Kohanim can be the butchers.
So fine, so then they keep for themselves. So fine.
They sell it.
Maybe. Why is it not done today? So those are basically the two only real reasons. It's because they would go out of business, and we don't... poor excuse. What applies in chutz lareitz equally, there's no difference. So what's going on? So this is an old question from time immemorial. They made a tanai with the kohanim in Yerushalayim, Yer HaKodesh. They gathered together some kohanim, and they said, "You all one big happy family, and therefore we want you to be the representatives of all of the kohanim of the world, so to speak." I don't really know if what I'm saying is so accurate, but it's partially accurate, that's for sure. Or at least of Yerushalayim, or at least of Eretz Yisrael. And we're going to write a document, and we're going to give you a nice amount of money. Akesef Ya'ane Esakol. We're going to give you this. They do this today. They do this in Eretz Yisrael. This is the best in Saturday. One of the what they did in Yerushalayim, they do this Arayor Mazer, and they have Kohanim. I guess there's a whole Chazak who the Kohanim are. And they give them a nice amount of money, and they sign the document on behalf of all of the Kohanim in Klal Yisrael. We're Moichel, the Zeroya, the Lechayayim, the Akeva. This has been going on for probably 100, at least 100 years, maybe even more. I don't know the details. There are people today that are very upset about this, and this whole procedure is already outdated, long outdated, and in desperate need of an upgrade to find the better solution. Okay, they should do something in America. There's a lot. They should do something about this. I told you that they had a big meeting ten years ago, maybe less, in the OU, where they brought together all the biggest rabbanim and butchers, and they had people there, and they had a big discussion about this topic, and they even published a record, a sefer, a little kuntris, what was discussed, and all the issues and solutions, and I don't think anything came of it. Business as usual. Okay, so I'm sure there must be more. We have to look into this a little bit more to find more about this. What am I telling you to do for? I want to tell you a little bit of a machshava. Rashi talks about all the lot of Ma'amis Kuhuna in this week's parasha. A lot of very interesting things about Ma'amis Kuhuna. And there is the Zeroya, the Lechayayim Yaakeva. You're also supposed to give the Reishas Hagez, the sheer wool. You give the first shearing goes to the Kohen. And yeah, I think there's some other gifts. Let me see if I can find the pasuk. The Reish, what?
Skin.
The skin, no. That's only by a carbon. That's only by a carbon. Only a carbon. And then Torah talks about this. I'll read you the pasuk. V'zeye mishpat ha-kohenim yis'om. Me'ez zoifre ha-zevach im sharm seh. V'nosan la-kohen. Hazeroya, hazeroya, v'alechayev yakeva. Then it's Reish, then it's Truma. Give him Truma. Of the Tirosh, the Yitzah, Reish, Hagez, Reish, Hagez. Kivoy. Okay, so basically it talks about Truma. Truma and Reishes Hagez and Zeroya Lechem Yakeva. Rashi doesn't say very much about Reish Hagez and about Truma. But he makes an incredible comment, which is really a bit unusual, about the Zeroya the Lechayayim Yakeva. Why these three? Why does the Kohanim get these three? And he says it's in reward for Pinchas. What did Pinchas do? There were two people, Zimri and Cosby, that were doing an aver in public. So Pinchas, what did he do? A kanoi, vigilante. He went in front of the whole Klal Yisrael, took his spear, and just murdered them in cold blood. Okay, very uncharacteristic of a Jew to do something like this. To go in front of the whole, take his sword and just murder them. Kanoi!
Also uncharacteristic of what they did.
What they did, why is it uncharacteristic? People do aveiros all the time.
Yes, in private.
They do it in public also. Yeah. There are a lot of chutzpah out there. Dime a dozen of troublemakers out there. Okay? He did something very, very bold, very, very... Today, it would not be very... They would censor, they would lock him up, for sure. Today, someone would do something like this. Someone does an aveir in public, and a guy gets up and kills him in public. They would put him in jail. He was a murderer. They would lock him up. He would be doomed forever. Okay? It wouldn't stand a chance in today's society. He would be finished. Oh, but Pinchas did this. It's a good kasha. Pinchas did it. The times have changed. It was a different situation. A different time, a different place, different situation. The whole environment was so different. You really can't relate to this Bizman Hazeh. And Rashi explains why the Zeroya, why the leg, what do we use as the Rashi? Darshei Rishumois Hayu Oimer. Those who like to, Rashi does not use this expression very often. The Darshei Rishumois, people who like to expound, you know, all of the people into homiletics. All the Rabbanim who are pros in homiletics, they love to say the following. Rashi doesn't, this is out of character for Rashi, but he says it. Zeroya tachas yad. You know why you give him the hand of the animal? It's in reward for the hand of Pinchas. Vayikach Pinchas roimach biyodai. He took a spear in his hand. Sherem aviyach roimach biyodai. L'chayayim, why the cheeks? Why do you give him the koi in the cheek? Tachas tefila. Vayamoy Pinchas vayifalel. Pinchas, before he did his act of zealotry, he davened, he prayed to Hashem. He was mispalel. That's why you give him the cheeks, the cheek. Vayakeva, why do you give him the stomach? Because that's where he stuck the sword. He thrust the sword into the keva, into the stomach. Of the perpetrators. Tachas ha'isha el kovoso. He threw the sword into her stomach. That's why you give the Zeroya the lechayayim v'akeva. So I'm just telling you, is this is why we don't do this today. Today, what I'm saying over here is not true, but it's a drush. It doesn't have to be true. It's why is it we're not looking to do this today? We're going out of our way today in the modern day and age not to give the Kohen the Zeroya, the Lechayayim Yakeva. Why? Why are we downplaying this today? We're hiding from our obligations. We're coming up with these outrageous excuses. You're not a Kohen. What do you mean I'm not a Kohen? I got the first Aliyah today in Shul. That was 9 o'clock. That was 8 o'clock in the morning. Now it's 9 o'clock. Business hours. Business hours, you're no longer a Kohen. Cinderella. Okay, the clock, you don't have to wait until midnight. 9 o'clock, when they 9 o'clock, you no longer, your kahuna has expired. We have all these excuses. Oh, we can't make parnasa. We can't make parnasa, it's too expensive, this and that. You know why we don't do it? You know why we make excuses and we find halachic loopholes? We don't want to highlight, we don't want to promote people to be vigilantes. We don't want people in modern day times to follow in the ways of Pinchas. Pinchas is a wonderful person. Pinchas ze Eliyahu. He's Eliyahu HaNavi. When you read about him in Parashas Pinchas, Dayenu. Dayenu, Dayenu. Enough. It's enough to focus on Pinchas once a year, to focus on Pinchas ze Eliyahu. But every time you sit down to dinner and you say, oh, where's the tongue? Oh, we gave that to the Kohen. Why? Pinchas. Oh, Pinchas. It's too much. Too much of Pinchas. It's not good for us. Because it's not kedai today to be a kanoi. We're in Golos.
If the kanoi is l'shem shemayim, if he does everything right, so
why? To be l'shem shemayim takes quite a feat. It's a mitzvah. Okay, I'm just telling you an idea. I'm just trying to throw out an idea that the Rashi highlights and says, you know why you give the Kohen? This all Rashi says. It's kineged the kanos of Pinchas. To live with this on the daily, it's a very good question why we don't do it with Zman Hazeh. All the answers that are in the books of why we don't do this Zman Hazeh really don't answer the question well. We found halachic legal loopholes to avoid doing the mitzvah. But the question still stands, why? You don't have to come on to these halakhic legal loopholes. People are always there. There are some very good people that are looking to do mitzvahs. They want, you know, here life is short. You want to hop around in this world to do some mitzvahs. So what's so bad? So once in a while, I'll give $50 to a kohen. I mean, the kind of mitzvah that I, so what's so terrible? If it says it in the Torah, it's good enough for me. So once in a while, I'll give away $50. I'll go to Glockmart, I'll go buy the tongue, and I'll go and I'll bring the tongue to my local kohen. What's so terrible? I'll do it once in Shemitah. Why is it that we're looking for legal loopholes to avoid doing this? I don't have an answer. I just want to make an observation. That being that, the Zeroya Ve'Halechayev Ya'akeva highlights an act of zealotry. Today, it's not, I don't think there's anyone that's going to tell you today that it's a good idea to be a zealot today. It's not the way we live. It's not kedai to be a zealot today. We don't do that. It's definitely a principle in the Torah. No one's denying the fact.
The word zealot, you interpreting
it. A kind of a fundamentalist.
You interpret bad.
What? It is the extremist. A person, it talks during davening. So you're going to go tell me he's talking during davening. He's in violation of the halacha. I'll take out my weapon, point it at him, get out of the shul, or I'll go and I'll mamish the nevazi yubarav. I'll scream on the top of my lungs and tell over. I did that. Look, Shulchan Aruch. It says in Shulchan Aruch, and I'm right. You'll get away with it. You'll say that's right. You did what it says in Shulchan Aruch. There are ways to do things, and there are ways not to do things. There are people that are zealots, there are people that are fundamentalists, there are people that are extremists. Just because you're right doesn't mean you're right.
Correct.
Okay, that's the, it's not kedai today. We accept what the Torah says, it is MS, but we all know that there are none of the Bali Muslim, none of the Gedolei Yisrael behave in certain ways. They didn't do things. The Gemara talks about a woman, she walks in the street wearing a red dress. So what did one of the Amorayim do? He ripped the dress off her. He ripped the dress off her. Oh, she was naked? That's what it sounds like. So try that today, right? Try that today in shul. Okay? Try that to a person or a woman who runs in the shul, you don't like the color of her dress, you rip off the dress in the middle of the shul. What will they be talking about this? It will go viral before you can walk out of the shul. Okay, you'll be in jail for the rest of your life, and you'll be finished the rest of your life. What do you mean? It says it beferish in the Gemara. Right? The answer is, you know, take a cold shower. Calm down here. Calm down. Just because it says in the Gemara doesn't mean that's what you do. Doesn't mean. This is not something we accept it. There's a principle. And maybe at some point in time and place there is a room for such extreme behavior, but not for the common man, not on a regular day, not today and not tomorrow. That's a fact. I'm not making, I don't know why you're looking like I'm crazy. No one's promoting zealotry, period. Therefore, the Zeroya v'Halichayayim v'Akeva, which Rashi clearly tells us, is a reward to the Kohanim for their extreme behavior, their fundamentalist behavior. It's not a recipe, it's not a prescription for Judaism in the 21st century in Golis. It's not. And therefore, let's read the pasuk and accept it.
We have to go back and do investigation. When did they stop doing this?
Okay, it's a good question.
The first place,
but today it's not, but today we're not looking to do it. And I'm saying it's nonsense, maybe, but I can't help myself.
When the situation arises, it's not an interesting
what?
It's only when the situation arises.
What arises? The zero hundred highway is zealotry. So zealotry, you can do it. You can do an act of zealotry every second of the day. Believe me. Walk down the street, you come to shul, wherever you go, you can do crazy things. What? Okay, let's go to another idea. Another idea, I want to try to compare. There are two mitzvahs in the Torah over here that there is very similar psukim and expressions. We have here in this parasha the mitzvah, the halacha of a zokin mamre. The beginning of the parasha, we learn about a person that doesn't want to obey orders. He doesn't want to obey orders. The best thing is there's an issue. Can we read the psukim ki polo mimcha dava la mishpat? It's empiric yud zayin pasuk ches. Rashi says, what we're talking about, we're talking beidom ledom, beidom dam tome, ledam tohar. When it comes to nida, is the woman a nida, she's not a nida, beidin ledin, doesn't say din zaka, ledin chai, a person did an avera, doesn't say what avera he did, bein nega lenega, a nega tzaras, the greatest of the great. All the big Rabbanim are fighting over the issue. Is this a nega? Is this kosher? Is it not kosher? They're fighting over an issue. The Chachamim. This is not the ordinary man. These are the Chachamim are fighting over an issue. So what do? They go to the Supreme Court. They take the matter, the local courts cannot decide, they have a disagreement. It says in the pasuk, the count of Yolisa, you're going to take let the local rabbanim, let them go to the Supreme Court. The count of Yolisa, El Hamakam Ashayif Hashem Utechabo, Vilvasola Kayim Halalim Yel Hashayfet Ashayye Bayam Mohem, Vedor Ashta, Vigidlucha, they will make an investigation, and the Supreme Court in the Lishkas Hagazis will settle the matter. Okay, that's what it says. And then it says the losers, the local rabbanim who lost, who the dayanim, the Supreme Court said you're wrong, they must accept upon themselves the psak of the Supreme Court. The asisa al pi hadavar asher yiruha ben amokim ahu asher yivcha Hashem v'shemartu la'asetcha asher yiruha. And let's say you don't want to listen. Let's say the local judge says, I know better than the God, then the Gedolim in the Halishka Sagazis, I know better. You kill him. You take him out. Vehoish Asher Yaseh Vizadoim Levilti, that refuses to accept Shemoya Elakohen, Hoime, Lashar Shalom, as Hashem Lakahu, Ola Shevet, Umei, so Ishahu. He's called a Zokain Mamre. And without going into all the details, what he needs to do, basically, in a nutshell, you have over here, it starts off with a small little matter. You have some blood. A woman brings a marah to a rav, and this rav, there are two rabbanim sitting in the Beis Medrash. This rav says tame, this one says tahar. They start fighting, one thing leads to another, they take out their whip out their smartphones, and they go and they send a picture of the caller. They're very good, high quality smartphones. It's only a billion colors, right? That's why they advertise. Why do they advertise when you buy a smartphone that has 10 million colors? Just in case the rav needs to send the picture of the marah to another rav. So it has more colors than there are colors, so it would be an accurate representation of the marah. So the other rav sees this is this one, and before you turn around, they're all fighting. They go to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court says the halach is the woman is tmeya. And the rav says, what? I know more than he knows. Don't tell me what the rav in the lishkas hadrasis, and he says to the woman, tahira. Oh, you passed him against the lishkas hadrasis. And the woman goes to her husband. This rav is chayiv nisa. He's a zokin mamreh. A zokin mamreh. Okay, fine. Now let's fast forward. Later in the parasha, we have this, it's very bizarre to pick up on this, is we have the story of Aiden Zoymini. Two witnesses testify, Reuven did not there. Two witnesses say, how could you testify? Imanu Hoyisem, you were with us on that day. How do you know about this? You're at the baseball game with us. So we go to the court, and we now have terminology that is almost identical. Mamish identical to the terminology of the Zoke Mamre. Incredible. Let me read some of the words. The Kiyoko Meda Chabish, it's in Perik Yutes, Pasik Yudzayim. Pasik Tezayim. Kiyoko Meda Chamas Beish Lamais Paisara. Viamdu Shnea Nashma Shalom Ariel of Nashim Ashadim Ashayib Yamrim. Vidar Shu Hashayfim Hatev. Vine Sheker Hoet. Sheker on of Yachim. The witnesses are false. How are they false? Imanu Hayisem, you were with us. Vaasisem loy. So you do to the false witnesses, kasher zonam lasas liachiv, uviyar Torah mikibecha. And it goes and it says the same, now it says the same thing, the same terms. V'hanisharim yishmu v'yirohu. All of the people watching this, this says exactly the same pasuk by the Zokin Mamre. You shall listen and you shall be afraid. V'lo yosifu lasas v'kadavahar v'hazev mikibecha. And it goes on to say, and then before when it goes, it says, when you shall go, v'darshu hashayftim heitev. They shall investigate. And again, it says, ki yakum v'amdu shnei anoshim asher lanu riv lufnei Hashem lufnei hakayanim v'hashayftim asher yihiyu bayomim ohein. Okay, it says in both of these cases, there were really three majors, there are more than three, but let's just focus on three. By both the Zoki Mamre and by the Eidim Zaynim, it says by both, that they shall ascend, and they shall go to the greatest of the great. They shall go to the HaKoyanim VeHashayftim Asher Yihyu Bayomim Ohim. And it's number two, by both of them it says Asher Yihyu Bayomim Ohim in those days, and Rash in both places says, Ein Lecha Elamasha B'yonecha. Don't complain, oh, 30 years ago we had a much greater rabbi, and he died. Look what we have now. We have a guy I went to Cheder with. This guy doesn't know anything. Rashi in both places says, too bad. Ein l'cho elamasha biyamecha. Whatever you have, that's what you got. Yiftach b'doroi, kishmul b'doroi. Rashi cannot say the same thing in both places. It says this expression, bayam mohen. And in both, then it says also, you shall make an investigation. V'dorishu ha-shoiftim. Heitev. And there it says also, they shall make an investigation. And then when the thing is over, it says, v'lo yosif, everyone shall listen. Don't ever dare do this again. What's going on? Why is the terminology, the psukim, of the Zoki Mamre almost identical to the psukim of Eidim Zaynim? What does the Zoki Mamre have to do with the Eidim Zaynim? What's the difference? What's the difference between them? Well, there are major differences. Number one, when you're dealing with the Zoki Mamre, you're dealing with a fight amongst the leaders of Klal Yisrael. And here, Eidim Zaynim, you're dealing with an issue that's referring to an ordinary citizen. Ordinary citizen.
It's more than that. He's a guy against the Mishpat. He's going to, he has to,
He holds his right. He can quote you the whole Shulchan Aruch, and he knows better than the Dayan Eretz Yisrael. Zaki Maram is not a partial person.
No, I'm talking about Edom
Zayim. Edom Zayim is ordinary people.
You're spotted on the Shoyftin, you're coming in and you're going to lie.
What are you saying? You're saying testimony. You're saying testimony.
You're lying with testimony.
And there's an investigation, and there's the punishment is carried out, and there's justice served, and the world should listen. These two examples that the Torah gives represent the extreme elements of society. There is corruption amongst the ordinary person. An ordinary guy. This guy, he stole a couple of bucks. He cheated. And the other, the pasuk of Zaki Mamre, deals with corruption at the highest levels. The highest levels of government. The highest levels, corruption. And the Torah goes through the process identically. You got a problem? You go to court. You go to the Dayanim that stand before Hashem. Both places, an investigation shall be made. In both cases, there will be justice. And in both cases, let the world watch and learn the lesson. There's no difference when there's corruption. There's no special card-carrying members of the upper echelon of society. You can get away with corruption, and the ordinary man can't. The Torah presents the same terminology, the same process. For the greatest rabbi who's corrupt is equal to the simplest person in society who is corrupt. If you're corrupt, you have to suffer the consequences. An ordinary person is corrupt, the Bezin investigates the corruption, they execute him, and everyone should watch and learn the lessons. If someone in the upper echelons of society commits a crime, on his level, with his chevra, his groisa chevra, with all the gedolei Yisrael, all the rabbanim, the rebbes, and the groisa, he's corrupt. He is to be prosecuted. He is to be put to death. And justice should be served, and the whole world should watch the mishpat. There is no different set of laws for the upper echelon of society and the simple man of society. Even though, and we're not dealing with the same crime, we're dealing with a crime amongst themselves. When one man, we're dealing over here, he says, we're dealing with petty things amongst people. The Zaki Mamre, he's not dealing with a petty matter, he's dealing with a matter in his league. In my league, I'm the biggest expert in Hilchas Nida. I wrote the books. I wrote the most popular star of Hilchas Nida. The whole Klal Yisrael is using it. They give every chassan in Kalah my sefer. And you're telling me I'm wrong? You're telling me that in the Bezdin HaGadol, they pass him against me? Every chassan Kalah uses my sefer. They're wrong, I'm right. Woman, you're tahar. I don't care what the Sanhedrin HaGadol says. That type of crime is not the type of crime that happens when two people are walking on the street, they have a fight on the street in some country you never heard of, two Orthodox Jews. This is a partial person. Doesn't matter. In your world, you commit a crime, you violate the law, you're guilty. There is a process of investigation, of a verdict, execution, and it is to be made known publicly what has happened. An ordinary person commits a crime, it's exactly the same terminology, the same process, the same words. To teach Klal Yisrael, there's no exceptions. Just because you work for the government, just because you're special, you're a miyuchas, you're this, you're that, it doesn't matter. If you're corrupt, you're corrupt. If you're honest, you're honest. And there is a little bit of a nuance I do want to point out, and that is, it's interesting, they're not exactly, actually that's one approach. But if you want to dig deeper, you look very carefully, they're not exactly the same. When it comes to the Kohanim, when it comes to the elite, it says, it doesn't say that you shall make an investigation, v'darshu. It just says you shall investigate. When it comes to two ordinary people, v'amdu shnei anoshim asher l'chamu l'fnei Hashem, l'fnei ha'kohanim v'ha'shoftim, asher yiyu b'yamorem, v'darshu ha'shoftim heitev. The degree of investigation of ordinary people is more thorough than the investigation that takes place by the upper echelon.
One is a mishpat, and the other one is a...
So you want to say another difference. One is in other lamakayim. You want to say is that when you're dealing with the issues of the Sanhedrin, of Dayanim, that's been Adam lamakayim, and this been Adam lachaveroi. One of them will start. One of the differences is that when it comes to when it says Asher Yihyu Bayomim Ohein, by the individuals it says something very fascinating in Rashi. Rashi says, it says, what does it mean Bayomim Ohein? Let me just find Bayomim Ohein. Yiftach bedoyroi kishmul bedoyroi tzorich at linoig boy kavoid. When it comes to the Zokin Mamre, it doesn't talk about kavod, but the Zokin Mamre. The El Hashafir Ashayyah Bayomim Hohaim, the Dorash, the Pasik test, by the Zokin Mamrein, it says, Afilu Enoi Kishor Shaytim Shayulufonov, Atat Sorech Lishmoyalon. It doesn't talk about Kovoid. Just listen. Eilacha Ela Shaytim Shaybiyomecha. So why is it that when it comes to the Zokin Mamrein, there's no matter Kovoid? You have to follow the judge, whoever occupies the office of the Sanhedrin HaGadol. You have to just listen to. And when it comes to the Edim Zaymanin, it says not just listen to, you have to give the judge honor. Asher ye bayomim hohim. There are differences. Giving cover is a little bit more than just listening to. You can listen, but you can spit at him also. I'll listen to you, but not just, yeah, giving kavod. Kavod is a higher level. It appears that the difference is that when you're dealing with matters, ben adam lachaveru, there's a much higher standard. The case of the Zokin Mamre is ben dom ledom, ben din ledin, ben nega lo nega. Nega is certainly a matter of adam lamokoyim, and ben dom ledom, Rashi says, dam toyar, dam tomei, that's nida. These are not matters of financial disagreements between men and men. These are Yeridea issues. And Zakei Chayev, it seems like also, it sounds like it is Mechal Shabbos, not Mechal Shabbos. These are matters that appears to be Ben Odom Lamokon. Ben Odom Lamokon, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, is not so makbid on his covenant. Not so makbid. You don't have to make such a thorough investigation, and you don't have to go give kavod to the Dayanim. But when it comes to mishpat, bein adam lachaveroi, edim zayimin is, you committed a crime, you have to die. How can you say that he has to die? How can you testify falsely? It's the ultimate crime. The ultimate crime of bein adam lachaveroi is not to steal someone's money. It's to testify falsely against him. That's the worst. To testify against a person falsely, there's nothing worse than that. To get up in court and to testify this person did an aveira, even aveira ben adam lamokayim, that is the ultimate rebellion against your fellow man. To go to court and to testify falsely against your fellow man, that's the worst of the worst. In this matter, the Torah it has very high standards. The darshu hashefim hated. A thorough investigation has to be launched. And when you deal with the judges that take issue, you have the ultimate respect for these judges, no matter who they are. Don't just these judges. The Torah wants the case, wants to give weight, enormous weight to the investigation and the punishment, and l'man yishmu v'yirohu v'lo yizidu n'odin klal yisrael. To a much greater degree when one man commits a crime against his fellow man. When a man commits a crime against Hashem, which really is the essence of the Zokin Mamre, who's a bigger Talmud Chacham, right? You know, you're not testifying against your fellow man. You're just trying to say, I know the halacha better than you, and it's all matters of religion. All right, you want to fight. We'll use the same terminology, but in contrast to a crime committed against a fellow man, there the Torah goes out of its way to emphasize, and this is a principle that's all over the Torah, is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu much, much more wants there should be peace amongst men than there should be peace between himself and Klal Yisrael in the world. You want to rebel against me? It's a problem. But you want to rebel against your fellow man? That is a big problem. And the degree of intensity that the Torah expresses by the ultimate crime that's committed against man is raised up many notches against what it says by the Zaki Mamre. It's like we need a benchmark. The Torah does a very good, and the Torah wouldn't talk about Zaki Mamre, we just derive it incidentally, then, no, Zaki Mamre. Oh, we have some terminology. But now the Torah, we have a benchmark of Zaki Mamre. And now when it comes to Edim Zaymanim, which is a crime against your fellow man, and the terminology is raised much higher than Zaki Mamre, the Torah is showing us how severe a crime is when one man commits a crime against his fellow man relative to a man committing a crime against HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Okay, we're going to stop here. Thank you very much. Let's have a wonderful Shabbos. All the best everyone.